You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Smelling sweet. Move up the road to the outside of town and the sound of that good gospel beat. Sits a ragged tent.
Always like working that one into the mix here, the first show we do in August, because it's always so hot outside.
And it's also recorded here in Memphis by that musical genius who is not given enough credit for what he did, Chips Moman of American Studios.
I know, every time I play that song, you get into, I said, we don't have time for Chips, the Chips Moman.
The Chips Moman. But it's the truth.
All right.
What can I say? He's also the one responsible for Elvis's comeback album.
Work must intrude, unfortunately. This is the hour I'm going to tell you about my trip to Selma. I was in Selma, Alabama last weekend, ladies and gentlemen, my first time there, and it was for a benefit of the Confederate Memorial Circle at Live Oak Cemetery, which is in downtown Selma, Alabama. This is, if you can believe it, a very beautiful cemetery.
What else happened in Selma besides... the Selma March and all that. You know, it was the last battle of Nathan Bedford Forrest in the Civil War.
Well, they've got a big monument to Forrest there that the Friends of Forrest Incorporated group have put up and maintain, and that was the group that invited me down to speak. So this is their annual fundraiser for the preservation of the Confederate monument and graves there at the Live Oak Cemetery. Now, the Live Oak Cemetery in Selma, Alabama, would not look one bit out of place in New Orleans, Louisiana. You've got all of these Spanish moss trees. It is very, very beautiful. And so that's why I was down there. And I'll tell you a little bit more about my talk in the next segment, but I want to talk about Selma itself right now. And listen, folks, I have no pleasure in reporting this to you. If I went down there and I saw a city that is 80% black being run efficiently, that was very clean and everything was squared away, I would come back and I'd say, listen, I don't know if I'm just wrong about things or if Selma is the exception to the rule, but I was down in Selma and everything was magnificent.
A garden spot.
It truly was, but I can't tell you that because it's not true. What I saw were the ruins of where a legitimate city once was.
It made Haiti look prosperous.
I don't know if it was that bad, but you wouldn't want to live there, and you certainly don't feel safe traveling through there. I mean, you see all of the things you see in a third world place. You see the signs of businesses are spray paint on the side of bricks instead of a legitimate sign. You see weeds. You see ruins. You see buildings and structures and homes in disrepair. And I will tell you this, we integrated our hotel. I took my wife and children down there because I wanted them to see me give this particular talk. They don't go to all of the talks I give and all of the speeches I give, but I wanted them to be there at this one because of the group that was having me and the fact that it centered around Nathan Bedford Forrest. But we integrated the hotel. Now, it's like you always say, Keith, obviously growing up in the South, we interact and engage with black folks on a daily basis, and we always treat them with every bit of respect and courtesy we would treat anyone else.
And
but it doesn't change.
And most of the time, they reciprocate to us.
That's absolutely right. On a person-by-person basis, in comings and goings, of, you know, you get along. But it doesn't change the fact that the reason why Selma is a third world city is because Selma has a third world population.
Well, that's what we always say. That's what I was going
to
say.
I said that on CNN. That was your line, and I took that to primetime CNN, and I literally...
And it's become one of our hallmarks now. But really, you cannot have a first world community with a third world population. And that lesson keeps being driven home with more emphasis with every passing day. And white people have got to get out of this, guilt-laden zeitgeist that has been foisted on us by the left, and go ahead and grab the reins and take control of our communities and our nation if America is to not slide into third world infamy. That's really where we're headed. And the left is the primary impetus behind that move. And we've got to defeat the left, not only for our good, but really for their good. If they, you know, they can do what they did in South Africa when they changed the government in South Africa from apartheid to anti-apartheid, it went to hell in a handbasket. And a lot of people basically packed up, people that had supported that change, found out what the reality of it was, and they hightailed it out of the country. Well, I don't want to see that to be a harbinger of what is going to happen in America. We've got to save America while it's still salvageable. And that's why we need to tell the truth about places like Selma, Alabama. This is supposed to be some holy place and a great monument to the success of the civil rights movement. It is instead a monument and an emblem of the failure of the civil rights movement.
Well, Paul Kersey, who is a friend of ours, he is a regular columnist at the UNS Review, but he's written a lot of books. And Paul was on with us back during our Confederate History Month series back just this last April. But he wrote the book. He literally wrote the book entitled The Truth About Selma, What Happened When the Cameras Left and the Marching Stopped. And this is the description of the book. We actually had Paul Kersey on to promote this book when it came out in 2017. And we offered it as a incentive for one of our quarterly fundraising drives, but this is what the description of the book reads. The racial violence of the past is largely gone, replaced by a flood of drug-related black-on-black crime that dwarfs the violence of Jim Crow. That was from the New York Times in 1994, when I guess you would still have the occasional modicum of truth coming out of the New York Times. But Paul Kersey continues, every year, elected officials at the federal and state level, along with celebrities, make the pilgrimage to now 80% Black Selma to recreate the famed march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. I stood on that bridge last Sunday. I'll tell you about it. Paying homage to the so-called civil rights struggle, this march is highly publicized and promoted by the mainstream media, Hollywood, and public schools to produce maximum volumes of white guilt across America, reminding them that they must forever atone for their ancestors' inequities. But once the cameras leave and the marching ends, what remains behind in the city of Selma, completely dominated by black elected and appointed officials, is a reminder of the collective fears the architects of Jim Crow and restrictive covenants long held for their posterity. This book that Paul Kersey wrote, The Truth About Selma, provides the reality of what the civil rights struggle actually brought to the city. And that's where we'll pick up with the encyclopedic historical knowledge of Keith Alexander. I think he set it up pretty well for where you're about to go, did he not, Keith?
He did.
Paul Kersey, what a great guy, what a great writer. Get that book, The Truth About Selma. I got it right here on the bookshelf here in the studio. Be right back to talk a little bit more about my time down there and the history associated with Selma next. Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate
educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by six corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Room gets suddenly still, and when you'd almost bet you could hear yourself sweat, he walks in. Eyes black as coal, and when he lifts his face, every ear in the place is on.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was Brother Love last weekend. It was 100 degrees and 1,000% humidity.
Remember that James has no hair on his head, too.
I am telling you burning. What. It was everything we dislike about Southern summers, and it was manifest. And I was sweating so much during my talk. I sweated completely through my shirt. It was just dripping onto my notes. But I will tell you this. I have never given a talk in all of the years I've done this, and I've done this my entire adult life. I don't think I've ever given a talk that was as well received as the talk that I gave in Selma. And it was a version of the speech that I gave, a speech that I give called It's Personal. And I posted actually a version of it that was from 4 years ago at another meeting on the website. So you get a little taste of it. But I let loose hell in this one. It's normally a 45-minute talk. I think I went for like an hour and 20 minutes, a little bit beyond schedule. But we had a great time. It was well received. When I made an announcement, my book had been banned, and I didn't have a publisher. Since January, we couldn't even get them on Amazon anymore, but we finally found a local mom-and-pop shop out of state that would print them again, and so we've got some boxes available. I actually put a notice up on the website just yesterday, I believe, about that, and we took a box down there to Selma and completely sold out. When my talk was over, my wife was running the book booth, and there was already a long line of people there. I told her when on our way down, if there were 50 people at this event, I would be very happy about that. 50 people, that's worth my time any day of the week. There were at least, I would say probably around 200 people there. Gene Andrews also gave a talk, and they had a meal. They had raffles. They had a lot of events. They had a beautiful bluegrass band, and I got a picture of that duo on the website as well that performed before my keynote. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful event, wonderful people. And when the chow line, they had a catfish supper. And when the chow line was announced, I bet you, Keith, that mile was a quarter mile long. It was a great event, well-received, powerful talk, sold out of books. And I don't know if it was just the fact that we were there in Selma with all of that negative history and that I really wanted to stand up and champion our people, or if it was because it centered around a fundraiser for Nathan Bedford Forrest, but I really wanted to put on a good show for the hosts of that event, and I think we pulled it off. I wish everybody could have been there, but that's all I'll say about that. And what I want to go back to, though, is Selma. So after the event, I did have the chance to go and stand on the Edmund Pettus Bridge and put a picture of that up on Twitter and on the website as well. And I was there, and it was important for me to go there. Edmund Pettus, by the way, was actually a Confederate Brigadier General. They have not changed the name for whatever reason. I guess it's so sacrosanct now because a bunch of chronic malcontents once walked over that bridge that they just can't change anything about it. But I was there. I was on that bridge. And let me tell you something that I say with absolute conviction. I was and am firmly on the side of the Alabama State Troopers and Governor George Wallace and Bull Connor and whoever you want to throw into that camp. In that conflict, I went, actually, of course, we know what was really going on there. We've talked to the officer Drew Lackey, who actually booked Rosa Parks in that iconic photo. He told us all about it. But you don't need eyewitness testimony, although it's nice, to tell you what was really going on during that so-called civil rights movement. I went to the Wikipedia page of Bloody Sunday, and I went to that bridge on a Sunday. Bloody Sunday, they said it was the white supremacist state troopers, because of their hatred and racism, beating the unarmed, peaceful protesters. Now, boy, if I didn't know anything else after what I saw during the BLM riots of 2020 and George Floyd, if you tell me somebody's unarmed and peaceful, I know something's up. Something was up there.
Well, particularly if you're hearing it from the mainstream media, you're absolutely right. See, the Selma Bloody Sunday incident was the kickoff that led to the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which is basically the reason why we had a stolen election in 2020. They have institutionalized in the black community voter fraud, vote harvesting, and proxy voting. They did this because blacks are not reliable voters. They don't show up in the same numbers and the same percentages as white voters. So they had to find a way to vote for people that weren't inclined to vote for themselves. And that's what the Voting Rights Act of 65 did. Now, the kickoff event for the program, the campaign to pass the Voting Rights Act of 65 was Bloody Sunday at Selma. Now, what they don't tell you is that John Lewis, Martin Luther King, and the other organizers of that march were hoping and praying for some violence to erupt in this thing. They told each other confidentially that if we cannot provoke the highway patrol and the constabulary there in Alabama to attack us, we are doomed. So they did everything they could to provoke it, and they did provoke it. The smart thing to do with, 2020 hindsight would have been to have set up some Southern ladies with white gloves on at card tables feeding lemonade to the marchers as they came across. If that had been the reaction, they would have had to go back to the drawing board. Now, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the kickoff event for that was the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church, which again was a very unfortunate situation. The Klansmen that put those bombs in there put them in a fire escape that was supposed to be off limits to everybody. They didn't figure on four girls playing hooky from Sunday school going down there to smoke and being killed in the explosion. They just thought they'd have an explosion, break some windows, this, that, and the other. Very unfortunate, and of course, they were innocent, the ones that were killed in it. But the left is never going to let a good crisis go to waste, as Rahm Emanuel famously said back during the Obama administration. And the left has always done that. They've always been waiting for things. For example, Dylann Roof's murder of 9 black people at that black church in Charleston, South Carolina, was the event they were waiting for to start taking down Confederate statues and tearing down Confederate flags. They had all this waiting. They were just waiting for a kickoff event. Selma was the kickoff event for the Voting Rights Act of 65. And that's what it's being recognized now for what it is. It is a way to facilitate voter fraud. And that's why the Republican Party of Texas had it on their to-do list to have it repealed. They don't want the Voting Rights Act of 65 to reign because basically what it did was facilitate voter fraud, and it has worked to, you know, like a top for the left throughout. That and the 2020 presidential election was the absolute, you know, penultimate example of that.
We were told again, just to get back to it, who we're going to believe, the media or our lying eyes? We were told that the BLM anarchy and the arson and the murders, all of that was peaceful protesting. So, but we know that it was the same thing going on in the 60s. How do we know that? Well, anybody who was down there could have told you at the time. They don't have a national media pulpit to do it, or a bullhorn to do it through the national media. But we have talked to the chief of police in Montgomery, Alabama, Drew Lackey. He wrote a book about it. And as you know, Keith, the cameras, it was different back then in the media. Now everything, it's live streamed. Everybody's got a camera in their pocket. But back then, the cameras wouldn't roll until the officers or the state troopers reacted. But what they were reacting to is what you didn't see on camera. It was the urine and the feces and the bricks and the taunts being thrown at them by these so-called
provocations.
And that's when you got the hoses. That's when you got the dogs. That's when you got the
bullies. That's when the cameras rolled. And also, did you notice that all of those people looked... all the civil rights protesters, the black ones, looked like a casting call for Steve Urkel in that.
And to be sure, out of all of those people, I'm sure some of them were legitimately peaceful, but there are enough of them that weren't to where you rightfully wouldn't want this whole ensemble marching through your city, and that's why they were on the bridge that day to stop them from getting
dressed. It was a production choreographed by the left. They learned it at the Highlander Folk School, which is where Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks both studied.
We'll be right back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Marusso reporting. By an overwhelming 86-11 vote, the Senate Tuesday night gave final passage to a bill that ramps up health care and disability benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits and other toxins. The PACT Act of 2022 passed Tuesday night. Pat Toomey, who led the Republicans installing the measure, warned that it included what he calls a trick that would permit indiscriminate spending. And a school in Utah has removed books from the shelves.
Utah's largest public school district is defending its decision to remove 52 books that some parents view as pornographic. The Alpine School District has roughly 84,000 students. The district decided to pull the books by 41 authors from its library shelves after an internal audit flagged them as sensitive material without literary merit. From the West Coast, USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Pry.
I'm Tony Marusso for USA Radio News.
Mike Lindell and MyPillow offering the BOGO extravaganza right now on a whole slew of MyPillow products. Now you can find all sorts of great deals on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillow, six-piece towel sets, Roll and Go Anywhere pillows, much more, all priced buy one, get one free. Go to MyPillow.com/USA, use promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175 and find you some great MyPillow products. They're all available. Oh, by the way, you can also get Mike's book absolutely free with any purchase, but you have to go to MyPillow.com/USA or call 1-800-951-8175. 8175 and make sure you use the promo code, the buy one get one extravaganza, going on right now at mypillow.com.
A kidnapped girl's escape in Alabama has led to the discovery of two decomposing bodies and the arrest of a man now facing murder and kidnapping charges. Police got a call Monday morning from a driver about a 12-year-old girl walking alone along County Road 34 in Dadeville, Tallapoosa County. Sheriff Jimmy Abbott said Tuesday at a news conference the girl had been restrained to bedposts for about a week, according to the criminal complaint. Jose Paulino Pascal Reyes, 37, was arrested Monday about 25 miles away in Auburn on suspicion of first-degree kidnapping by U.S. Marshals and police, the sheriff said, adding other agencies are also on this case. U.S. job openings fell by the most in just over 2 years in June as demand for workers eased in the retail and wholesale trade industries. But overall, the labor market remains tight, allowing the Federal Reserve to continue raising interest rates. At least 4.2 million workers voluntarily quit their jobs in June and layoffs declined. This is USA Radio News.
To everything.
The only thing good about talking about Selma is the fact that things are beginning to turn away from the system's narrative with regards to these topics. I'll say a few more things about Selma. It's hard to get to. This isn't a place off any major interstate, and regardless of which direction you're coming in from, if you're coming in from Montgomery, as those so-called marchers were, well, I guess they were certainly marching, but peaceful protesters were. If you're coming from Tuscaloosa, it is not near any major interstate, and so you have to. It takes a little doing to get to Selma. Norm Macdonald, the former cast member of Saturday Night Live and a Hollywood comedian who passed away not too long ago, he actually had a lot of based things to say. Norm Macdonald did, and I was looking at something he said not long ago. Well, he said it a while back, but I saw it not long ago after his passing. And he said, I was reading through my history book, and what a surprise. The good guys won 100% of the time. And you see the joke in that, of course, is that the victors, of course, write the history, and those who are vanquished are always relegated to being the villains. And I thought that was a pretty witty remark, but it's certainly applicable here, I think, Keith. And so, yes, it was special because of the history to be in Selma, to be in Selma at an event to raise money for a Confederate memorial at a beautiful cemetery.
And what really happened there, you know, there was a great article in American Renaissance some years ago about fornicating in people's backyards,
well,
side yards,
yeah,
and all that. All that happened.
Because they were camping on the side of the road. I mean, you know, and they were just.
It was a bacchanal that would have made Sodom and Gomorrah look like Happyville or something.
Look,
you know,
the bottom line is, look, it doesn't matter. There was a story I saw recently of, once again, somebody running from the cops, and he was disobeying their orders, and guess what happened to him? He got roughed up. If you are told in no uncertain terms to disperse, and the state troopers are giving you X amount of time to get off the bridge, to turn around, to go home, and you don't, things are going to happen. There was a day and age in this country where if you were engaging in riotous behavior, there was shoot to kill. That's how you deal. That's how you put down a riot or a legitimate insurrection, not what we saw on January 6th, of course. But I thought that the troopers actually demonstrated a lot of restraint in that era compared to what was going on.
They were not swinging. They didn't go into the crowd swinging. They went pushing them, and when they got some people fighting back, that's when they swung, okay? So, you know, again, what you have been told about this is the exact opposite of what the truth was. The real provocateurs were not the highway patrolmen. They were the marchers, and they did it on purpose, and they were intending to have violence visited upon them. They were inviting it.
You had to have it, and if you didn't have it, Lyndon Johnson wouldn't have gone down there and signed that
horrendous bill.
Now, let me tell you something. I looked up, just in case there was something to do with the family in Selma that I didn't know about. The top 10 tourist attractions in Selma are all so-called civil rights pilgrimage sites. You can actually pay a homeowner a certain sum and come into their private home and sit in a chair that Martin Luther King supposedly sat in. I mean, this is what's going on in Selma. I'm telling you, though, I drove all around trying to find the good and the bad. I wanted to give a very fair treatment of it. It is a hell of a scary place. I will say this, though.
No movie theaters and no real supermarkets either.
Had a great time after hours with Gene Andrews and some invited guests at the hotel lobby. I want to tip my hat again to Gene. To Bill and Ruth Ann, for your kindness and your support and your generosity to my family. My wife and children were down there. And to, really, to everyone who came up to talk to me after my speech, you all deserve acknowledgement. I enjoyed speaking with all of you. But it was a busy month last month, you understand, Keith. For TPC, we were in, obviously Alabama last week, but earlier in July, we were in South Carolina. And there are a lot of great events going on in the South that are off the radar, but very good people and numerous people are turning out to. Now, I do want to say this, if I could.
James takes more vacations than Duncan Hines. and of course, they're all in the service of the mission of this show.
I don't know if I have enough time to read this, but I'm going to try. And then I'm going to give you a full segment to offer a take on it. This was Brad Griffin. We talked about Brad. We talked to Brad last week. We talked about him a little earlier tonight. When John Lewis died in 2020, this is what Brad wrote, in part. By the way the media has reacted, you would think that one of the apostles had just passed away. Governor Jay Inslee of Washington calls him, quote, justice in the flesh, end quote. Joe Biden says, quote, we are made in the image of God. And then there's John Lewis, end quote. Stacey Abrams called him a groit of this modern age.
A groit?
Whatever that is. Elizabeth Warren.
You can't make this up.
Called him a giant and a moral compass. The New York Times called him a human saint. For what is John Lewis deserving of such lavish praise? It is not for his accomplishments during the 33 years he served in Congress representing Atlanta. That's for one thing. It's for leading a mob across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama on March 7th, 1965. After being ordered to disperse, you were willfully disobeying the orders of law enforcement. John Lewis refused to do so, and the mob was repulsed by Alabama state troopers. And God bless them, I am on your side. You were in the right, Bull Connor. The event was labeled Bloody Sunday by the media. It became part of the narrative of the civil rights movement. It made John Lewis a civil rights icon, and it was a key event that led to the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. In the naive days of the television era, white Americans swallowed this narrative as it was presented to them. In this sacred narrative, John Lewis was transformed from a mere human being to being made in the image of God into a saint and a civil rights martyr who advanced the cause of equality, justice, and progress through the civil disobedience against state and local authorities. The Edmund Pettus Bridge became a symbol of the heroic struggle. Religious pilgrims from across the world trickled into Selma. To this day, to see the relic, which has become a modern equivalent of a medieval shrine. Selma ceased to be a city in Alabama where people actually work and live, but it still has taken on national significance because of so-called Bloody Sunday.
Bloody Sunday was a bloody fraud, okay? That's what we need to carry away from this. All of that violence, so-called violence, was what the intention of the marchers, including John Lewis and Martin Luther King, had in mind. If they had not provoked it, they would have been sorely disappointed. This is another manipulation of public opinion that basically marked the entire civil rights era. And this is why people like Eddie Miller, you know, and Michael Hill and Brad at Charlottesville had been misled by this sacred image of peaceful protest that was, and you would always be regarded as the nice guy and the good guy by the media. Boy, did they ever find out how false that narrative was.
Right. What they were allowed to do, we were not allowed to do, except we actually were going there to be peaceful and to exercise our God-given rights to the First Amendment and the freedom of assembly and the freedom of speech. And we're actually, next week is the five-year anniversary of Charlottesville. What happened that day, we'll tell you the real story of what happened that day with eyewitness participants, just as we did on the day itself, August 12th, 2017. We were live on the air, and we were talking to the people who were bloodied and bruised and beaten. And what they saw was very, very different than the official narrative. And we'll have a five-year anniversary show next week. The full 3 hours is going to be on that event. But very quickly, going back to this article at OD, Brad writes, in my lifetime, John Lewis was a civil rights dinosaur who was a throwback to another era, who was fond of calling Donald Trump a racist. I knew him for coming back to Selma every year for the Holy Pilgrimage, of course, in which he would reenact his march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge that made him famous.
His tap dance across the bridge.
But there is another darker side to the legacy of John Lewis. Selma and the surrounding region never ceased to be a place where people lived and worked after 1965. It just ceased to matter in anything but the symbolic sense to the elite media. After John Lewis left town, the cameras left, the marching stopped, and the civil rights legislation was signed into law. But the people who lived in Selma and in the Alabama Black Belt had to go on living under the new order. Black majority rule came to Selma. History moved on, and the 55 years that have passed since Bloody Sunday, the practical result has been that Selma became the poorest city in Alabama and the ninth poorest in the entire United States. This symbol of equality is now one of the worst and most unequal places to live in the entire country. The symbol of justice is now unjust to anyone unfortunate enough to be born there. The symbol of progress is a blighted and abandoned television prop. The Voting Rights Act succeeded in establishing black majority rule, and in doing so, it obliterated civilization.
And it was a relatively civilized and prosperous place until the Civil Rights Movement. Since the Civil Rights Movement, it's been in a state of inexorable decline.
As for Bloody Sunday, no one died on that day. No one died on that day, but Selma is now the most dangerous city in Alabama and one of the most dangerous cities in the country. That's the legacy of the Civil Rights Movement, and that is what you get with a third world population. We'll be back.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Of course, everybody, everything you know and have learned and have been taught in school and have seen on television and radio about the so-called civil rights movement is a lie. If they lie to you, listen, here's how you know it's a lie. If they lie to you about everything else, do you think they're telling you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about the so-called civil rights era and who are the good guys and who are the bad guys and who are the peaceful guys and who are the violent guys and who are the haters? No, you know better than that. I turned you off while you were in the green room. But anyway, No, they were not, and they did not, and that's how you know. They lie about everything. How do you know when they're lying? When they're speaking, and if they are, they didn't lie
moving.
About everything else and tell you the truth about that. That's how you know.
Everything
David,
they've done is
know.
A fabric of lies, and furthermore, they don't have the truth to do this, but look at everything they've done. It's result. What the Bible say? You shall know them by their fruits. Can a good tree bring forth corrupt fruit? Can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit? America's public education in 1954 when Brown came down was number one in the world. Now it's number 38. Selma used to be a prosperous civilized community. Now it's a battered hulk of empty and abandoned houses and rampant, uncontrollable crime. This is the legacy of the civil rights movement. It's not what it's pretended to be, and anybody that celebrates that is celebrating basically the corruption and downfall of the black population in America. That's what's happened as a result of the civil rights movement.
Now, I got to tell you something, Keith. I don't know if I've ever told you this, even after all these years, but I'm going to play a clip for you, and then I'm going to tell you something that I think you'll find interesting.
Okay.
When did the so-called Bloody Sunday, where nobody died, take place? 1965?
Yes.
This is what was going on 2 years earlier, standing in the exact spot where Jefferson Davis was sworn in as president of the Confederate States of America. This was part of George Wallace's inauguration address.
Today, I have stood where once Jefferson Davis stood and took an oath to my people. It is very appropriate that from this cradle of the Confederacy, this very heart of the great Anglo-Saxon Southland, that today we sound the drum for freedom, as have our generation of forebears before us done time and again down through history. Let us rise to the call of freedom-loving blood that is in us and send our answer to the tyranny that clanks its chains upon the South. In the name of the greatest people that have ever trod this earth, I draw the line in the dust and toss the gauntlet before the feet of tyranny. And I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
That was not only the sitting governor of the state of Alabama, and the people cheered. That was a very competitive presidential candidate, and the last to carry a state as a independent candidate or a third-party candidate for president. Ross Perot never carried a state.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you know who wrote that speech?
Do you know who wrote that speech?
I do.
But do you know the significance of that person?
Yes, I do.
Okay, then I guess that
You tell him. You tell him then. You answer.
Well, that was Asa Carter who wrote the speech, and he is the step-grandfather of a very dear family who has become one of our closest friends as a result of our work on this program, and we love them dearly.
And, of course, Asa Carter later reincarnated himself as Forrest Carter, and he wrote The Outlaw Josie Wales and The Education of Little Tree or something like that. Very successful author. All the left just fell in love with him about that Little Tree book until they found out what his past had been. But let me tell you, it just shows you that there were brilliant people supporting people like George Wallace. They have you believe that they're a bunch of knuckle-dragging troglodytes. We had very literate, very intelligent people who just could not cope with Jewish power and influence and with the media control that the left had over the entire United States back in the days before the internet.
All right, and so here's the thing. People say, well, segregation is so bad. If to live apart is not the same as oppressing someone, to live apart is not the same as subjugating someone. And ask yourself this, ladies and gentlemen, and please answer honestly. If you're tuning in for the first time or you don't know what's going on, would you want to live in Selma? Would you want to live in the ninth most dangerous city in the country or the most dangerous city in Alabama? Would you want to live there? And why has it become so dangerous? Would you want to live there? And if you don't want to live there, then you can't oppose what George Wallace was saying there and what Asa Carter wrote. And by the way, there were some advisors of Wallace who said, you got to take that part out. You're going to catch hell for it. And he said, if I take that out, the whole speech falls apart.
Well, let me ask you this, too. Segregation was supposedly so terrible. Guess what? Black people have never been hungering to integrate with white people. Not, that's a big lie upon which the civil rights movement is based. Birds of a feather flock together, and black people prefer one another's company.
And that is a very different thing, Keith, than treating people with ill will. As we said earlier in the program, any time I encounter somebody of a different race or ethnicity or faith or whatever, creed, I treat them with respect and manners. And if it's an especially older person, it's yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and no, sir, and whatever. That's just the way I was raised. So it has nothing to do with that. But there is a difference between being polite and wishing well for everyone and wanting to entirely mix to the point where there are no distinctions. There are nothing that make us unique except our hunger for consumerism.
I don't want to live like that.
I want my heroes. I want my faith. I want my customs and folkways.
And guess
you
what?
You can have yours.
Blacks want their own, too. They live in communities where they are surrounded by one another, primarily by choice. They're not forced to be there now. And furthermore, what has happened in America is demonstrates that the birds of a feather do flock together. Blacks now want separate graduation ceremonies. In colleges, they want separate dormitories. They want separate courses of study in which white people aren't allowed to be part of it.
I want to say one more thing. Well, they want separate church services.
Well, they definitely have always had separate churches. They used to have black policemen that were the ones that policed black neighborhoods, and apparently that's the way they wanted it.
All right,
certainly don't want integration when it comes to police enforcement.
I got to say this about last week's topic, Christian nationalism and the rise of Christian nationalism, and why the media has such a fearful fascination and the elite and the system has such a fearful fascination of Christian nationalism. This was in Brad Griffin's review of the last week's program, in which he appeared, of course. According to recent polls, as many as 75% of Republican voters believe the Great Replacement. We've talked about that. Half of the white evangelicals believe that America was created to be a European society, a Christian society. A third of Republican voters believe that their state would be better off if they seceded from the Union. We've talked about all of this. The point is, millions of white people are now embracing our ideas, and millions of white Christians. Now, Christian can be a capital C or a little c. It can sometimes just mean people like us. It means the people in our community. Religion functions, of course, as a glue that holds cultures together and a foundation of societal order. I've taken a lot of slings from the Southern Baptist Convention. You know that they threw my entire church out because my pastor wouldn't expel me as a member. But what I believe and what Brad Griffin believes and what Dr. Michael Hill believes and what you believe, Keith, and what the people of this program believe, it is slowly winning out. Data and anecdotal evidence fleshes that out.
Common sense prevails eventually.
The conventional wisdom in a large swath of the population. And now that the whole community senses itself as being under attack, and again, the George Floyd riots really flipped a switch, it's beginning to shift into threat mode. Ordinary white people expect a fight is coming, which is a stark change from the lazy, complacent political atmosphere of the Bush era. And to that, I would say, you listen to the people who cheered the George Wallace talk. I guarantee you, to a man, they were a Christian, either capital or lowercase c. And when I was driving back from rural Alabama last week, I could guarantee you that I could go to any home on those Alabama back roads and knock on the door and have them in agreement with me on the issues. And that's the thing.
They have not changed, basically, from the George Wallace era. And that's what the left is finding out to their chagrin now. We were talking about Christian nationalism. Christian nationalism is just another way to slice the cheese. But guess what? When you, it's taking things out of the racial prism that we've had to view everything through because of the left. If you go by religion, guess what? Hispanics and blacks and whites are Christians, white Gentiles, okay? What does that leave for the leftist coalition if all of the Christians get together and abide by that rubric of Christian nationalism that Christians need to be ruled by other Christians? That would leave atheists, Jews, Muslims, and Hindus from the subcontinent of India, all together about 10% of the population. 90% of the population versus 10%. Pretty good odds, folks. That's really the secret sauce behind Christian nationalism, and that's why it's a great movement and a great innovation, and it needs to be supported.
And you don't have to be a Christian for me to fall in ranks with you. A lot of our regular guests are not Christian. I have a lot more in common with some of our non-believing friends than I do with people that you would find certainly within the leadership, especially of
Russell Moore
denominations. But and so we have to have a Christian and non-Christian white coalition. But white Southern Christians are our natural allies. In my life, I've seen this, and on this program I've seen this, and being there in Alabama last week and in South Carolina earlier in July, it all reinforces the fact that you give these people safe cover, you give them a voice of leadership, and they will become who they are. The river will flow. If unimpeded, the river will flow back to its natural destination. And so I love these people. These are our people. I certainly appreciate people who don't share the faith but are fighting for our racial interest and our cultural interest and are fighting for Western civilization as I am. We're all brothers in this fight, but these are our national allies. They're not Christ cucks. They're good people.
Yep, and do not be misled by denominational headquarters. Denominational headquarters does not speak for the people in the pews. The people in the pews, basically, if give light and the people will find their own way.
Keith Alexander, thank you for your contributions tonight. I'll be back with the little apostate next, making her debut appearance. I really look forward to introducing her to the audience, and you'll hear from her in just a few minutes. It'll be an hour full of thought crimes. Well, it's already been 2 hours of that. That's every hour here. We'll be right back.
Compounding the felony.